Give me 2 eggs. So tomorrow I got nothing.
Do you believe that everybody should be born poor? 1 week of their life. 1 week.
As you see, I'm in a wheelchair. I was hit by a train 10 years ago. And a year ago, I was hit by a truck.
There's a feeling in the pit of your stomach the first several nights that you're out there when you realize you actually are in a place where you got nowhere to go.
How do you like being at the shelter?
Kind of good. And I like it when we had our own bed, different. And when we get our new house, I'll be so happy when I have my own room.
This may surprise a lot of people, but in the last school year, all of our schools here in Butte County, there's 14 different school districts, identified about 900 students, children and youth who were in homeless situations during the course of the school year.
Welcome to the Without a Roof program, where we expose and remedy poverty, the worst form of violence.
We have an extraordinary number of folks living on the streets right now. Poverty, the opioid epidemic, all of these things have kind of come to a head, and we have a lot of citizens who are understandably frustrated. It would be great if more people would show up at the City Council for Business from the Floor and just speak about your experiences with these issues and offer some alternative perspectives. I think the council needs it.
Your next opportunity to attend Chico City Council sessions is Tuesday, April 17th, 6 p.m. at 421 Main Street, Chico. All right, Gamble Mash here for the KZFR Without a Roof radio program. And folks that have followed this show over the years, or even my social media on Tumblr and YouTube, foster care system and making changes to that, the overall system, is something I really support and is really near and dear to my heart. So I've been really blessed that someone from Sixth Street, actually, intern, Autumn, and sent me a name, Kaylin Jones, who's actually working on an assembly bill, 2247, that's looking to make some well-needed and well-timed changes to the foster care system. So welcome to KZFR, Kaylin.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Yeah, what do we need to know about Kaylin before we dig into this topic of foster youth and this assembly bill?
So my name is Kaylin, and I am a CSU Chico student. I'm majoring in psychology, and I am on a policy and legislative committee with CYC, and that's California Youth Connection. It is a organization that builds and empowers youth to work with legislative and policy and help practice change.
And how long have you been involved with CYC?
I've been involved with CYC on and off for about 5 years.
Mm-hmm. And what should our listeners know about that experience? What would you say about CYC if they were to say, tell us what's so great about CYC?
What is so great about CYC is that it is a outlet for youth to express their voice and to have themselves heard on a real level.
Kind of what my friend Courtney Gork Burns was talking about in this video that we're going to listen to right now, now that you mentioned it. We'll listen to it right now. We'll get some of your comments around that.
Yes, exactly.
So we're going to talk a little bit about how the system's broke and what you would do to fix it.
What I heard a lot in the foster care system was, we don't have the resources. And two, I heard a lot of people, I just don't have the training to be able to help you. And to me, that just was a little mind-blowing, because it's like, you don't have to be a licensed therapist in order to listen to someone, in order to sit with someone while they're experiencing emotions. You don't have to be a therapist to know that it's harmful to judge someone who's having a really hard time and to meet them with criticism instead of love and affection. My experience with the foster care and behavioral health system has not hardened me. It has not broken me. If anything, I learned what I don't want to be. I learned that I want to show love and affection and empathy. I want to give people the space to express themselves, even if it is slightly uncomfortable for me, even if I have quote-unquote better things to do. To me, there is no better thing to do than to sit with and validate another human's experience. And that's how I'll continue to live my life. I host a human expression open mic night. Every week I give people 3 hours of space to get up on a mic and express themselves, no matter what that looks or sounds like. And, you know, they're going to be met with appreciation and with acceptance.
All right, Caitlin Jones, we're taking a little break from our interview to watch that wonderful, wonderful video interview with Courtney/Cork Burns. It was filmed in Arcata, December of 2014. What would you have to say around that?
I loved the video when she spoke about the system not breaking her. That was so empowering and just relatable on so many levels. Mm-hmm. Like, just being able to hear that, like, it's really empowering.
Any other comments on that, the interview that we just watched and heard?
I really liked when she said about expressing yourself, and it was really empowering and impactful to me because that's kind of like what AB2247 is about that stability and getting youth comfortable with expressing themselves and living their life and having the equal opportunity that other youth that don't have to live in a foster care system.
Why don't you tell us a little bit of your background of being a foster care youth?
So being a foster care youth, I went into care when I was age 14 in Del Norte County. And what that was like for me, it was very hard being as when I was with my biological family, my dad was in the Army. So it was very hard for me to settle down into a small community, and especially one with not very amenities. And yeah. So it was hard, and then being put into a kind of a home of strangers was a hard adjustment for me. But being independent that I was, I kind of always knew that it was just a stepping point, that I wasn't going to be in it forever. So I automatically, I began working with Coastal Connections up in Del Norte, and I was on a kind of a youth council thing where we surveyed Del Norte County. We paired up with Humboldt State University and kind of needed to figure out what was wrong up there. And that's pretty much where my advocacy started.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just taken off ever since.
So why don't we transition to this assembly bill that you're working on? As I understand it, you did some lobby days with CYC just the past month down at the state capitol around this bill. So tell us a little bit about the bill and maybe the lobbying process as well.
Yes. So California Youth Connection actually just had their big DAC, which is called Day at the Capitol. And pretty much what that is all 33 counties that CYC recognizes, we all go and lobby our bill to the legislators and assemblymen at the Capitol. Mm-hmm. And it was very successful. The Senate floor actually recognized CYC on organization level for the amount of bills and legislation that we pushed through dealing with foster care. One of the exciting things that happened at DAC was Assemblyman Mike Gibson offered to author our bill. And it was very awesome for us because right now he's working on a lot of other like homeless foster youth and mm-hmm. other sort of policy work dealing with this. So it was very cool to have an assemblyman want to put this on his plate.
So why don't you give us some of the highlights of the bill that everyone likes so much and is so excited about, especially from someone that's former foster youth. I think that's really an important person to be advocating for this change.
The bill's name is AB2247. It's kind of a mouthful, but it's an important mouthful. It's called Creating a Youth-Centered Process for Stability Within the Foster Care System. And the implementations that this bill is going to require is child family teams to be notified before a placement disruption happens. Also, a documentation process at the ombudsman's office. And what that means is to where if there's an issue going on in a foster home or a resource family, that a youth can call the support line and it'll be documented. It'll be known. It won't be the youth just, crying and, asking for help all the time and not being heard. So it's a different kind of form of documentation.
And it's confidential? The parents don't
It's all confidential.
The foster parents won't know?
Okay. Yeah, it's all confidential. And also, it is going to create a flagging system on those kind of quote-unquote bad resource parents mm-hmm. because then you'll, have documentation on those homes and it'll be like, see, this happened quite a bit.
So when we're talking about these teams, what were the name of the teams again?
So they're called Child Family Teams.
Child Family Teams.
CFTs for short. Mm-hmm. And what that is, it entails everybody on that youth's team, whether it's the social worker, the attorney, the foster care liaison at the school, the resource parents, any bio children the resource parents may have that is causing mm-hmm. problems in the home, because that also causes a lot of conflicts mm-hmm. when a foster youth goes into a home with bio kids, because then they are kind of on like a different, you know, they're too.
I can see that, yeah.
So it's kind of a way for all of these people to get into a room and talk and be like, what is making this placement good? What is making this placement bad? Do we need a new placement? Is this a permanent placement? And what can we do to make things better? Is the child succeeding? How is his social life going? How is his home life going? Is he physically okay? And like different things like that can be seen, and they can all be kind of put on the table for everybody to talk about, and nobody would be missing mm-hmm. In action, kind of say.
As part of that legislation or part of that team, it's probably a good thing for the listeners to know. One, to know that we're speaking with Kaylin Jones, a Chico State University student and one of the champions of Assembly Bill 2247. But I was stunned to find this out a couple of years ago. But literally, the way the foster care system works, if you're a foster parent, you can call up the foster care agency and go, you know, you said I had to call you in a week, and a week from now, I don't want this child in my home anymore, right? Maybe you could explain how damaging that is and if this legislation will help change that dynamic at all.
So what that process that you just explained is called a 7-day notice, mm-hmm. and it is very, very common in the foster care world, and you can say a lot of children, myself personally, has experienced a 7-day notice, and it is very damaging, and it makes you question, why don't they want me? Why? What did I do? Did I do something wrong? Why didn't I get a chance to fix it? And it's like when you work on a big giant puzzle and you're staying in that home, and you're where every day you come home and you slowly work on that puzzle. You're slowly building the connection with the resource parents. You're slowly, you know, getting familiar with your environment, your home, and things like that, to making it to where you can be successful in school and different things like that. And then one day you are given a new puzzle and have to start over. And it causes a lot of mental trauma for the youth in creating social relationships. Yeah. It makes the child go into the next home already on a rebellious stage, because they're like, oh, then last home didn't want me. This home's not going to want me. That's one of the main targets that this bill is trying to avoid with offering the CFTs in a place of a 7-day notice, to where you have to call this team of people before you can give this 7-day notice, because mm-hmm. the 7-day notice is so, so critical and so
like wow.
Normal people don't experience that. Like, you're not, you know, even your landlords don't call you up and be like, oh, you have to move in 7 days.
No,
it's like,
don't.
You're given a 30-day notice. And then also,
you have legal things that stretch that out. Exactly.
Yeah. And also you're having the time to do it on your own personal level, saying your goodbyes to people. I've met youth that have lived in homes in Humboldt County for 9 years. And then one day those foster parents were like, oh, we don't want to take care of a teenager, but we had this youth since she was like 8 years old. Mm-hmm. And now that she's 17, 16, she's getting independent. She's gaining her own. And the parents are like, we don't want this. We wanted the child, you know, and they just tell her, pack your things up. We're taking you to the courthouse. And they just mm-hmm. drop her off. And, you know, and then especially up north, it's even more critical because there's lack of homes. So then she had to,
huge,
especially
Humboldt County.
Yeah, she had to move to Shasta County. So that girl had to literally move into a totally different, away from her friends, away from everybody, to on just a moment's notice, because these people didn't want to deal with a teenager. And it's just heartbreaking to on any level. And I understand, because one of the big opposings to this thing is the safety of the child, the safety of the resource parents. And I totally understand those safety issues. But at the same time, like, it causes so much more long-term damage to that youth that it's going to create more issues.
So you were foster care 14 to 18. How many homes were you in that 4 or 5 year period?
I was in 5 homes.
5 homes.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
One of my moves when I was moving, I just went to school and I was in my PE class, and my social worker showed up at my school and told me to come down to the office. And when I showed up to the office, still in my PE clothes, all of my belongings were there, and she told me that I was moving homes, and I had a box labeled phone charger here. My privacy, like everything, was just totally violated because I, you know, thinking that somebody just packed every single thing I owned, and then, you know, I just left school, and there I was just waiting to see which home I was going to next. So it was very, very like hard for me to deal with, because also like going back to school, you think, oh, is my social worker going to come over and pick me up again? Like, you don't know. And so it makes it very hard to make long-term goals and succeed.
You think your past experience is why you're so passionate about making change? And how helpful is that for you to be involved in changing the system that you are a part of?
Absolutely. When I share my story, I don't only share my story, but I share experiences that I've had with other youth. And I feel like it is a traumatic and heartbreaking experience, and no one's story should be untold and no one's voice should be unheard, and especially when they're having to live through a system that they didn't have a choice to live in. Mm-hmm. It's not like we raise our hand in the class and one day I'm like, oh, we want to be in foster care.
And I want to be in a different home every year. That sounds so exciting.
And then changing high schools right after that.
Now, you've used the term resource parent several times. What's the context of that, and what is a resource parent?
So the state is trying to drift away from the foster terminology. Oh. So resource family and resource parent is kind of a creative way about, because it's a resource for you kind of thing. So it's a way to kind of not, like, they're no longer fostering you. They're a resource for you kind of thing. And I don't know. I'm both ways on it. I'm like, all right, it's just another name. Like, at least I'm not a ward. You know, like, that. I would hate it being called a ward of the court. That was like, just like, whoa. You might as well stamp my paper with that one. Uh-huh. So I am both ways on it, but it's just, I don't know. It's just like I said, it's just the way for the state to drift off of that terminology, because they know how personal it is. And it's really kind of, you can't pay somebody to love. So it's kind of drifting away from that fostering, loving terminology and going on to the resource family and, you know, keeping the child safe and things like that. And also, a lot of counties are going into preventative processes to help prevent the child even from going into foster care with going in.
Huge. That's a huge deal for me.
It is. It is. Like Shasta County right now with IHSS is going to, I don't know that acronym, but I know it has to deal with
in-home supportive services.
In-home supportive services. And
in-home health services.
What it entails is it's like a therapist going into a home for 9 months and helping a family, teaching the family what structure and stuff like that is. And also, a lot of the times is with the poverty, stuff like that, it has like huge judgment biases, because they might say, oh, because this person's poverty, they're probably not going to, but I think that's a load of crap sometimes, because you can still not, you don't have to have the nicest house in the world, but you can still have a good family.
Yeah, it's someone that I really cared for a lot that was in the industry. I don't have to say the name for a long time, but she had mentioned that, you know, within the CASA system, court-ordered special advocate, you know, just like foster care in a way, they're all doing the best job they can, and especially those advocates. But a lot of them are biased. So if they see a child in a rich family's home, that's a loving, caring family. And you can almost have the same exact caring situation in a home that's poor or in poverty. And they're looking at ways that they can change that situation and pull that kid out of there. And it's just so damaging. It's just like, you know, the lack of money doesn't have any bearing on how much love and care you get in a home, huh?
Mm-hmm, exactly. And also, it goes both ways, too, with even in the foster homes. If the foster home or parent has a lot of money, if the foster home is a nice quality home, the family, they have nice jobs, they have a lot of money, in small, poor communities, they're looked at above themselves. They're looked at above things because they have a lot of money. So it doesn't matter what goes on in that home. It doesn't matter if their biological children are ruthless to the other foster kids and don't let them go to the same bathroom together because they don't want to share a bathroom, or won't eat at the same table as the foster kids because they want to eat with their brothers and sisters and things like that. And those situations are even more damaging than someone living in a bad quality home mm-hmm. and not having as much money.
Where are we at with the bill? I mean, what stages are we at? What do our listeners need to know about learning more about the bill and how they can champion it?
So we are actually pushing through with fiscal committees right now.
It's always about the money.
I'm so sorry.
It's okay. You're new to this. You're doing great.
So we're pushing through those committees, and we've had some opposings on it with the social workers union and things like that. They're really concerned about with the documentation process and the investigation that the foster care ombudsperson's office will enlist. They feel like it would, quote, come after a witch hunt for social workers. And to me, I feel like just an excuse to kind of oppose the bill because it kind of makes them do their job a little bit harder.
Accountability.
The social worker union is the only opposing that we have. We actually had to do kind of like a sit down meeting so they wouldn't like publicly go out and like bash our bill because it's a really good bill. There's no reason any bad or whatever should be sent to it.
Well, they're falling into the reason why you want the bill. This is child centered. It's not social worker centered.
Yeah.
And you know, and I think way too often we don't focus on the child. We focus on everything around the child and not the child. So
exactly.
You know,
this bill has also kind of stirred up a little controversy, you can say, because stability is a big word. And it's being looked at in a lot of aspects of the foster care system right now. Like there is a bill also coming out that has to deal with the amount of times group homes call the cops. And they're trying to see why is that happening? And that's not creating stability when, right. you know, cops are constantly coming to group homes and things like that. One of the things with the CFTs in this bill to help kind of push it on is little crisis unit teams to kind of show up at those critical moments of the resource home when it's argumentative, when there's stress and depression, or if someone's threatened, and it's a crisis team kind of to come to mm-hmm. the on-site to diffuse the situation before it even escalates, before the cops even get called.
Mm-hmm.
So I like how it's causing that controversy because it's kind of making everybody realize, like, okay, this system needs stability, like it's not working out. And also, like, even with long-term statistics, they're just finding out that living in foster care and through all the extra traumas and stressors that you have through your life, it's being linked to like heart attacks when you're older. And those statistics aren't out because they don't do those kind of research on foster youth. So it's really like, it's not only like traumatizing mentally, but like later down the road, like you're physically going to be feeling it because you grew mm-hmm. up in this traumatic scenarios and stuff.
Listeners just joining, you are listening to the Without a Roof Radio program here on KZFR 90.1 FM. My name's Guillermo Mash, and I'm interviewing Kaylin Jones, a Chico State student and champion via California Youth Connection for a foster care bill, a brand new bill, AB2247. And if you Google that, AB2247, you will see the language for the bill. And it was actually posted to the internet on April 2nd. So this is a new California state bill. And we are very pleased to be able to present that here on KZFR and to have someone as passionate and as knowledgeable as Kaylin Jones here in the studio. Now back to the interview. There was a big study done. It was really a sobering, eye-opening a year or two ago about group homes for, you know, foster group homes where they literally have multiple kids. And they're trying to move away from that model. But the whole pervasiveness of calling the police, so they looked at some of the homes that were calling the most. And they had some instances where they called the police because one kid poked one of the social workers with a candy cane. And the mm-hmm. kid was arrested for assault because he supposedly poked a social worker with a candy cane. So I'm like stunned myself, Kaylin. I'm kind of like, I don't need terminology like crisis team or call the cops. There's very few things I would ever call the cops about. And someone sticking me with a candy cane wouldn't be one of them.
Well, that's the stigma, right? Foster youth get is that we're so crazy. We're so violent. That's why we don't have our own family, because that kind of thing, it makes me sick to my stomach, because I don't like having a stigma. Like, I'm not a bad kid. I shouldn't have a stigma that I'm a bad kid because I had personal family issues. Like, that's not appropriate in my eyes. So it is what initiated that whole bill process. Is there was a home in, I think Merced or one of the LA counties. They called a group home called the cops over 500 times in the year.
It was probably in the article.
That's
probably the candy cane story.
Is the candy cane. And literally, it's, if you think about it, that's like you calling the cops every single day. And some days you call them even more because, you know, you call them twice or three times a day. You're going to call them breakfast, lunch, and dinner every day. The cops will be at your home. Mm-hmm. And like, as a youth, living in that home, like, can you imagine, like, you know, living there and be like, oh, has the cops came yet? Oh, no, they'll be here today. It's like,
it's really fascinating in a way about the whole stigma, because it's almost like the cops keep showing up, and I'm not going to say whether they were happy to do so or whatever, but they kept showing up. But if that had been another home where it wasn't stigmatized, there's a bunch of foster kids living here, so we obviously need a big police presence. Yes,
exactly.
They might have quit showing up, or they might have kind of tried to intervene, going, hey, what's going on here? Why are you calling the cops so many times? Mm-hmm.
Well, sometimes they don't really, you know, they get paid either way. That's just another call for them. It's just they're not going to.
It's crazy.
Yeah. But one of the things that I thought was really crazy is one of the. The bill was very specific with the crisis unit being a van type unit. So like for me, I envisioned, like, you know, me and my foster parent were arguing about, you know, whether I'm not going to go to school or, you know, something that happened at school. And then a big van showing up at my house with a crisis team jumping out ready.
Like
a
SWAT team.
Yeah, exactly. Like the way the bill is like worded, that's literally like how it sounds to me. Like, I'm going to be fighting with my resource family and then there's going to be a big van pulling up to come help us. And it's like, I like it, but then I'm like, you know, we're not like the whole stigma. I hate it, honestly.
Because that's just common, you know. I live with my biological family. I was a runaway, but you would have arguments with your parents. I mean, this isn't like, let's call the cops and a crisis team. We're having an argument about my child going to school.
Yeah.
We'll be right there, ma'am. We got resources are coming right now. We're sending a van.
Yes.
Like, what the hell? This is like something out of a science fiction movie. I'm sorry.
I can't imagine living
a little bit of humor to it, but I can't imagine being in that situation.
Humor is one really good outlook that we have. One thing that we are trying to do with the whole thing is we're trying to create like a foster care joke book.
I'd love to read that.
Yeah, huh? we have some.
Yeah, how
good,
are you doing on that? Oh man,
have some good ones.
You got one?
Yeah, I do. It's like viewer discretion, whatever. But there was some really good ones where it was like, knock knock, who's there? And you would say who's there, and it'd be like 7-day notice, you know. And then one when we're all in the group of, you know, the room coming up with these jokes, and this kid raises his hand. He's like, I can't really relate to these knock knock jokes because my foster parents took my door away. And we're just like,
whoa.
It's like, whoa, dude. And there was like, you know, like the normal ones of like, why don't foster kids play baseball because we can't find home, you know, those ones. But kind of a way to put humor on a very grim and like,
yeah,
you know, aspect of things.
And it's realistic because I'm sure some of the things these kids have said to themselves to kind of deal with it.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
It is so real. One kid spoke up and was like, you know, it's a visitation when you see your mom on an episode of Cops. You're like, oh my God, right now. You're like, no, you did not just say that. And so it's like, it is kind of, it's eye-opening too, because when you like hear that, when you're like, whoa, this kid literally like saw his mom on Cops and that's how it was like the visitation. Mm-hmm. But then it makes you also look at things and be like, well, that's why there needs to be a good system that creates stability, because, you know, that kid got taken away from that situation to be put into a better situation, not to worry about his stuff being stolen in a home, or like whether or not he's going to get picked on in the home or things like that.
Well, thank you again, Kaylin Jones. And I'm really interested in this, following up on this story. It's going to be a good ending. I see it.
Yes. We'll keep in touch.
All right. Thank you, Kaylin Jones, for being on the program and telling us about AB 2247. And indeed, it was a report. It was actually the Chronicle that ran a story that prompted Assemblyman Gibson to support 2247 as well as 2605, which specifically looks to limit, quote unquote, the criminalization of the foster youth population. So we're going to be following this story the rest of the month, and want to thank everyone that's listened to the Without a Roof radio program. Next up, talking about practice here on Pew Pow.